You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. As usual, there is no shortage of things to talk about when it comes to things going on in law enforcement. That what's going on in this nation never just seems to surprise me anymore. But here's a little tidbit out of New York. Now, we all know that the violence towards law enforcement officers is not lessening. It is growing. The attacks on law enforcement seem to be more and more frequent, more and more armed encounters. So with this incident that took place in New York, this is really a cause for alarm. I'm going to read the headline. Video: NYPD chief praises cop for using taser to disarm man with gun. All right, so now that gives you a little hint of where this is going. So the two police officers, NYPD officers, were dispatched to a report of a man with a gun. And they found him. He had the gun in his hand. Now, it turns out that this was a pellet gun, but it was a replica. There was no way in the world that you could tell that it was not a real handgun. So the officers, when they approached this guy who's got the gun in his hand, didn't even pull their own weapons. One of them pulled a taser, and the other deployed, you're gonna go crazy with this, pepper spray. Yeah, so two trained NYPD officers respond to a man with a gun call with a taser and pepper spray. What's wrong with this picture? Thankfully, this guy did not have the ability to kill them with this weapon. Otherwise, there's a very good possibility we would have been mourning two more police officers. So the question is, why do police officers not want to pull their gun in a deadly force situation? So when this got made public, one of the police chiefs came out and basically complimented the officers for their restraint. Well, that wasn't restraint. That was recklessness. Recklessness is the only word. And why would two officers fail to use their training and their own survival tactics and techniques when confronted with an armed man? Well, the answer is pretty clear. It's because they're afraid of the consequences of using deadly force, and they are not getting trained properly. They may be getting trained in the aspects of survival, but there is this other force that is coming towards them politically, and they, instead of using their survival instincts that they are born with, they are forcing them down, and they used inappropriate force. Now, you've heard me say on the show before that the appropriate use of force is one of the most misunderstood aspects of policing. When you are a police officer, first and foremost, you have a right to go home. You have a right to protect your life. You have a right to protect your own life and the life of your partner and other citizens. You don't do that if you don't properly apply use of force, and that includes deadly force. Now, are there times, are there circumstances when using low lethality weapons might be appropriate? And that, of course, the answer is yes, there are times when it is. But when you are initially confronting an individual that's armed, that is not the time to deploy a weapon like pepper spray. It's insanity. So when a chief comes out and then praises inappropriate behavior because luckily the situation turned out right, what this does is it serves to promote this to the public, saying, hey, well, look, it happened here. These officers used pepper spray and a taser, and it worked out okay. You know, luck is not an option when it comes down to policing. It is skill. It is training. It is experience. This was luck. This was pure, dumb luck that these officers survived this encounter. Now, a police union came out, and they were livid about this, as they said that they cops don't want to pull their guns even if their lives are on the line, one officer told the Daily News. So this shows a serious issue, and it's not just in NYPD, it's all over the country. You have officers that are hesitating to use the appropriate force, and this I unfortunately have to report is killing cops. When bad guys think that they can get away with using a deadly force or threatening deadly force against law enforcement, and they are not afraid of the consequences, and those consequences not only being arrest, but of course of being killed themselves, that puts officers' lives in jeopardy. And so one of the things that we really have to keep in mind is how an incident like this can truly backfire on the law enforcement community. There's no doubt in my mind that once this headline hits, as it has where these officers survive this encounter, there will be more people in political circles and law enforcement leadership and citizens who point to this and say, hey, it worked here. Why don't we have this as a policy? And that will get even more cops killed. So this incident out of New York, it turned out to be okay, only because the incident had an incredible amount of luck, and this individual was not armed with a loaded true firearm. We can't count on luck. It simply can't happen. Now, when I talk about the violence towards law enforcement, there have been so many shootings. We had a situation in Houston earlier this week where four police officers were shot in a single incident, and it was regarding a narcotics warrant. Houston police officers were doing a search warrant looking for narcotics, and when they made entry, there was a male and a female in the house. The male opened fire, striking one of the officers immediately. The officers returned fire, tried to get him out, the officer who was down, out, and the wife of the suspect picked up the shotgun to use against the police, and she was shot. And then a standoff took place, major gunfight. Both suspects are dead. That really is a shame. But four police officers hit. Two are still in critical condition. This continued violence against law enforcement is taking a toll. The union president came out a lot more forcefully than any police leadership did, and this is symptomatic of leadership that is lacking in resolve and lacking in the ability to rally their troops behind them because of their political correctness. But the police union came out really strong, and they said, you know, this is insane when police officers are facing more and more violence. There has to be a strong leadership initiative. And I'm not talking about in single departments. I'm talking about universally, that leadership, law enforcement leadership in this country, needs to come out and in a unifying way, a unifying manner, let people know that the cops aren't going to take this. They are not going to stand by and let themselves be cannon fodder. They need to show the public that if you try to take the life of a police officer, you will be met with overwhelming force. And that overwhelming force will not be using tasers or pepper spray. If you turn a firearm on a cop, then you are going to face deadly force. I don't see why that message isn't being announced loud and clear by law enforcement leadership. Well, actually, I do understand why, but it's disappointing. This is a time, as law enforcement face more and more violent encounters, more and more physical attacks, that our leadership, the law enforcement leadership, should be coming out in a very strong voice, a unified voice, coming out and telling people what they should know, that there will be consequences when you try to kill a cop. You know, in it's becoming so commonplace that you're not even hearing about it most of the time. Like just a few days ago, a trooper tried to make a car stop on an individual who was seen taking a car that didn't belong to him. Well, turned out this individual was armed with what they're calling a military-style rifle. So it's a long rifle, semi-automatic, no doubt. And when the trooper tried to stop him, and this isn't even a major crime, the suspect opened fire on him through the back window. And then he was so emboldened that he got out and started approaching the trooper, who unloaded his weapon, then did a combat reload, re-engaged, and killed the suspect. Now, this didn't even make, you know, the news, because it's becoming so commonplace. Thankfully, this trooper, was not only trained to survive, he had the survival mindset, the warrior mindset. And this is one of those issues that I talk about all the time. There is this movement afoot by, quote, progressive, unquote, law enforcement leaders to embrace a guardianship mentality. And I say this, that if you don't have the warrior mindset, where you can switch from being officer friendly to being able to take the life of the person that you are encountering, you really need to find a different profession. That's the long and short of it. This isn't violent. It's not crazy talk. This is the way police officers have to think if they are to survive. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. If you're a law enforcement officer, you know that wearing body armor, besides being uncomfortable, sometimes can get a little odoriferous, if you will. Wearing that gets sweaty, gets hot. It's difficult sometimes to find the right deodorizer that works, that is natural, that will take care of business. And there's a great product on the market, and it's a Rest My Vest spray, and it's military police grade odor eliminating spray. Now, you don't have to just use it on vests. It's good for all kinds of clothing items. Rest My Vest spray. Now, where do you get it? Stinkyvest.com. Of course, Stinkyvest.com. And they've got this great product. I highly suggest it. It's not expensive. It works really well. And it what it does is it eliminates odors through absorbing molecules, odor-absorbing molecules. Doesn't use harmful chemicals. And it's great for pets. It's great for all your clothing items. So check it out. Stinkyvest.com. Arrest My Vest spray. Check it out, stinkyvest.com.
Well, the Out and Out perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a really interesting guest. His name is Corey Flowers. And Corey is a 20-year veteran. He's a sergeant with the Greensboro Police in North Carolina. And he's had a number of different areas of expertise, including stints as an intelligence detective, specializing in criminal subversive groups, SWAT operator, SWAT team training officer, street gang squad supervisor, and he trains local, state, and federal law enforcement officers nationwide on various subversive groups, leadership tactics, and has written articles and conducted interviews and podcasts for a bunch of law enforcement magazines. And Corey, thanks so much for taking the time to be a guest on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks for the invite, Randy. I appreciate it very much.
You know, one of the things that I find so interesting about what you're doing is related to the training that you do regarding subversive groups such as sovereign citizens and other radical groups like that. You know, many people in America have heard references to some of these groups, but don't really know the inner workings. And I think by having you on Blue Lives Radio today, it'll be a very interesting conversation for not just the audience as a whole, but also law enforcement as well. So first of all, tell me a little bit about your career with Greensboro PD.
Sure. So like you started off with, I've been here about 20 years. Like most of the folks in our profession, I've done a various number of jobs. We've got about 700 officers or so, so plenty of opportunities to bounce around in the agency. So I worked at night for the first couple years exclusively on the street, went into our investigations bureau and did a lot of property investigations. At that time, I started delving into street gangs and into some of these subversive groups, readying myself for whenever one of our intelligence positions came open. It finally did around 06, and jumped in there and ran a lot of the investigations within our intelligence division for about 6 years, specialized for most of that time on white supremacists, white nationalism. And then in 08, 09, when the economy really tanked, we saw sovereignty and the sovereign citizen movement explode globally almost, but especially in the United States. And so that's what led to us really diving deep into that subculture for our own needs. But then it turned into to building training that was needed across the country. Since then, I've been promoted out of there a couple times. I've run a downtown bike squad for a while. I was a SWAT team guy for about 9 years there in the middle of my career, and ran one of our criminal street gangs, street crimes units for about a year and a half, trying to take the guns away from the bad guys at night.
Well, I'm sure that you had your hands full doing that. So you've had a really varied career. Sounds like mostly in the action street stuff, and that's something that is a career choice. You know, a lot of guys choose to do the promotional route and you know, climb the corporate ladder, so to speak. So it's good to hear from a real street cop about some of the things that are going on. Now, you know, many people don't know what the sovereign citizen group is. Can you give us a little background about that?
Yeah, sure. So at its base, at its core, the idea of sovereignty, which has been around in our country for 75 or 80 years or so, the idea of sovereignty and the way it's peddled among these subgroups is that no one has any authority over you. So, you know, in your area, a Las Vegas Metro cop shows up on a call with his command presence, with his decals on his car and the blue lights and the uniform and the shield. You know, often that command presence and just our being on scene handles 90-95% of our job. With the sovereign subculture, none of that matters. All of that is just a charade. That's just a guy or a gal in a uniform. They don't heed any authority, particularly of metropolitan cops. And it really causes problems for officers who haven't been indoctrinated into the culture, trying to figure out, why does this guy not heed my instructions? Why is he saying such weird things like quoting the uniform commercial code and asking for my oath of office and saying that I don't have any authority? And what happens often is you can get very behind in the decision cycle on the street, and it could lead to more dangerous encounters, because while you're trying to catch up and figure out why this fella is not heeding your authority, you're not making proactive plans to deal tactically with the situation. What happened in our city here, we had several of our patrol guys on traffic stops deal with sovereigns. They then got sued for $70, $80 million. And so our officers and our bosses came to the intelligence unit and asked us for training to train our officers. So myself and my partners at that time didn't have any knowledge beyond Google and Wikipedia. So we started looking for training around the Southeast, which didn't exist. We started looking anywhere in the country. It didn't exist. So we took it upon ourselves to really go out and dive deep into this culture. And from that, we built the first street level proactive 101 training for law enforcement in regards to sovereigns. And we started teaching it around our area, trained our whole department, and then immediately almost started getting calls from all over the East Coast. And from there, it just kind of mushroomed, because it was a need. And our mantra was always not to get behind and put yourself in a disadvantageous position when you don't have to. So we wanted to roll out this training as quickly and aggressively as possible, so that officers, agents, deputies, and troopers don't get behind, which was it's been a success so far, and really enjoyable to see how that's benefited folks all over the country.
You know, the sovereign citizen movement, you know, I've seen some horrendous video training tapes from confrontations with individuals from that. Now, they're all over the country. They're not isolated to Greensboro. This is a weird movement that any law enforcement officer in the nation could always run into anytime they make a traffic stop. And why are they so dangerous, though? Because I know that that there have been a number of armed confrontations with these guys leading to shootings.
That's right. So, you know, and speaking to your point, it's actually a global phenomenon. We've done distance training and consulting for law enforcement agencies in Europe and South Africa and Canada and Australia. So the reason that a lot of the times these will lead to armed encounters. One, I do believe that we as a family of law enforcement, we tend to get complacent. You stop your 1,000th car in a couple months, and you tend to let down your guard and not be as perceptive to when folks may throw out some of these rather obtuse terminology. Where if you're dialed into the movement, those serve as red flags that can really put you in a more cautious state. The other thing is these sovereigns don't a lot of times adhere to a lot of our gun laws. In a lot of states, including ours, you have to have a special permit by the sheriff's department to conceal a weapon. In most states, if you're a convicted felon, you can't have a firearm. Sovereigns, of course, like we've said, they don't heed to any of the laws of the land. So just the fact that a lot of times sovereigns will have lengthy, fraudulent, felonious criminal histories, which would legally prohibit them from having firearms, that doesn't count with them. That doesn't matter. So they're going to continue to carry their firearms. Just the fact that they don't have a concealed permit, again, that's a law of the land. It doesn't apply to them. So they're going to continue to carry that firearm concealed. So that's the problem. Just the rules that maintain society, they don't adhere to them. And then what you get is of course, predictable chaos.
I was unaware that this was an international issue. So are you saying that this movement of non-acceptance of governmental regulation is, these are not Americans that are abroad. These are people who are living in South Africa and Europe, et cetera, and so forth, but they've adopted the same philosophical approach, or is there actually an organization?
Yeah, so the sovereign umbrella, there's no solid organization. And in our country, for instance, you can't, there's not one textbook. Like, you don't go to the library and get the sovereign textbook and take the test and then you're in. It's always been propagated word of mouth, face to face. And now in the last 30 years with the advent of the internet being widely available, these ideas are propagated everywhere. So in different countries, there are different details, different spins, but in a lot of first world countries, there's some form of the fraud scheme of sovereignty that is teaching folks that you can exit society, you can exit the bounds of government, and therefore, the laws don't apply, taxes don't apply to you, the law enforcement officers they don't have any authority over you, with just different spins and different names. But the subculture, the grand fraud scheme, is really spread well beyond the bounds of our country.
You know, when you think about it, it's so nuts that someone could, the normal human being could say, no laws, no rules apply to me. That's crazy. It's crazy thinking.
Yeah, it is crazy. Where the sovereignty movement gets a lot of new input of folks is when we have things like, in our country, the 2008 economy downturn or depression, or however you view that. But it's human nature, to be anxious, to experience some fear and anxiety when, say, your checkbook is a little bit slim. Those last couple days before the next paycheck, and you've got to decide going to the grocery store or not. We experience a little bit of stress. So then you think about that compounded times 1,000 when something like the 2008 downturn happened. And which hit, blue collar America very hard. You had a lot of blue collar workers. A particular percentage of them were already, anti-government, distrustful of the government, maybe conspiracy mindset, conspiracy theorist mindset. And then all of a sudden you have that massive dose of stress based on the fact that you lose your job and you lose your livelihood. And then you get down to, the bottom of your savings account, the bottom of your checking account. And then this fella comes along. Or you get this email, and it throws you things based in reality. Did you know that in 1933, the U.S. Fed went off the gold standard? Did you know that since that time, the U.S. federal government no longer uses gold to back our currency? It uses your human potential. Did you know that your Social Security number is not for identification purposes? It's actually a secret account number. Just for a mere $100, come to our conference, come to our seminar, and we'll equip you with the tools to tap into these secret funds. Now, in normal, clear thinking times, when folks have a job, when everything is good and they're not experiencing that stress and anxiety, that sounds as crazy as it should sound. But the problem is when you get that kind of stress and you get folks that are, you know, a lot of times already just off in their thinking a bit, but then they get that heavy dose of stress and desperation, that's when these movements explode. And that's what happened for in our country in 08, 09 into 2010.
That's fascinating, that your take on this. So have you seen any exponential growth of this movement, if you will, in the last few years, or is it pretty much holding steady?
Yeah, we've seen, I would say, if you plotted this out on a graph, and again, numbers are solid, numbers are hard to come by. There's all kinds of estimates of, a lot of people throw out 300,000-ish Americans adhere to these beliefs in varying degrees. But I would say, if we saw it on a graph, 2008, 2009, an extreme spike. And since then, I wouldn't say that it's climbing aggressively, but just from our experience and, running these trainings across the country and then getting input from our brothers and sisters across the country, I think the internet has really been just a disastrous force in propagating these ideas that, 30 years ago, if you wanted to get into this movement, you would have to track down somebody and sit down with them or speak to them one-on-one on the phone. But now you can sit in your mother's basement, in your bathrobe over the course of a weekend and get indoctrinated for 30, 40 hours of videos. And then Monday morning, show up at your courthouse, at your court hearing, a newly indoctrinated, raging, violent sovereign a lot of times. So I don't think it's going away. And that's particularly because, human greed, wanting something for nothing, wanting to be left alone, wanting to be, free of any constraints, that's always going to be lucrative to a certain group of folks.
So there are profiteers involved in this who are somehow making money on it. Is that?
That's right.
So
yes, sir. There's a very similarly to the way that we'll go and run seminars for law enforcement. There's a guy or a gal running the same seminar just for the opposite purpose somewhere else, where they'll have these seminars. We attended some of these in undercover capacities where, a teacher, a guru, a charismatic trainer, again, all fraudulent, will run these seminars and equip these people with these ideas. And then upon leaving the class or the seminar, you get equipped with, electronic documents, pre-filled lawsuits, pre-filled liens to lean against officers, agents, deputies, and troopers. Some of this paperwork whereby you can allegedly pay your private debts through these secret funds. So it's a massive, I would call it a underground black market of how to do fraud, how to equip folks to do fraud. And the problem is, why does it not go away? One, human greed. Two, it's because there's really no better business bureau online for reporting, a seminar that was run in a business park somewhere that, it's kind of under the radar anyway. And two, often folks, when they get scammed, we've seen this over and over, when they get scammed, and particularly when they get scammed out of a lot of money, it there's a degree of shame to it, and they're much less likely to report it to the police. So there's a lot of obstacles there to kind of stamping out this fraud.
Well, have you ever attended one of these in an undercover capacity?
Yeah, for the year that we, when we were really doing our research, really reaching out in this movement, we went to some of these meetings. We went to some of these common law grand juries where they'll, try a cop or try a deputy or a judge. And we went to some of these meetings. We went to some of these seminars.
Hold on a second. I need to hear a little bit more about this. What do you mean they try a police officer or they try a judge? What does that mean?
Yeah, so one of the more lucrative, I would say, components of that draws people into the movement. The biggest one, of course, I think, is greed and just wanting to get something for nothing. The second one is a lot of times, these movements attract conspiracy theorists, attract anti-government folks, anti-government extremists. And so one of the big draws to the sovereign movement is the idea of a common law grand jury, or they call it a common law court, whereby they will, if a sovereign, for instance, in Las Vegas, where you're at, gets pulled over by the police, gets written a handful of citations, or goes to jail for a couple of days, sovereigns, of course, view that they have perhaps been kidnapped, they've been taken against their will, If you write their name on a citation, they may view that as intellectual property theft because you wrote their name without their consent. And they're going to hold a common law grand jury, and they're going to try Trooper Randy Sutton. Okay, they're going to try Lieutenant Sutton in their common law grand jury. So you'll have 12 jurors. I mean, it looks like a mock court. 12 jurors, all sovereign. A judge who is sovereign, so you can kind of see where this is going. And then you'll have a sovereign who will stand in this court proceeding in absentia of the trooper, agent, deputy that's, of course, not going to show up for this. The sovereign, what we would call the defendant, they call the victim, of course, on their side of this equation, will testify in these proceedings on such and such day. I was a free man of the land traveling with my God-given unimpeded right to travel when I was stopped by Las Vegas Metro officer, and of course they've got your name conveniently on your citation. He or she restricted my right to movement, kidnapped me, held me against my will. So the jury deliberates for 9 seconds, and unanimously all, yep, absolutely, your sovereign rights have been trampled on. And then the judge will enact a sentence, which is where a lot of these lawsuits against officers come from. Where a lot of these really exorbitant property liens, false property liens against officers come from. Or even we've had lots of documented instances where these quote unquote sovereign judges will issue orders for your arrest. And yeah, you heard me right on that. The idea that they will, certified mail you a order for your arrest from the People's Republic of Texas or the second district of, which is madness. Until you really think about it, and then the idea that there's that kind of blatant aggression against law enforcement, the idea that even they would, entertain the idea of coming to your police station and serving you with an order for arrest, it's quite troubling when you really sit back and think about it.
Well, it's especially troubling when we know that there have been violent encounters where they have attacked law enforcement and killed law enforcement.
That's right. That's right. So we train officers because, the problem is that, if I come to your agency and we teach street gangs or we teach biker gangs, we can train officers on how to visually look at a group of bikers, how to visually look at a group of gang members, and by sight determine who they are, the colors they wear, the tattoos that they wear, the unique way they carry weapons. You can look at bikers from hundreds of yards away through magnification and determine who they are by sight. But with sovereigns, they don't look like anything in particular. We've dealt with white, black, Hispanic, male, female, young and old across the country. So we equip law enforcement with a more sensitive ear, because sovereigns, where they don't look like anything, they all say the exact same things. So if you're dealing with a 20-year-old black Moorish sovereign on the West Coast or a 90-year-old white constitutional sovereign on the East Coast, they're going to say a lot of the same predictable things. And so we equip officers with those buzzwords to alert them that they're dealing with a sovereign, and then they can, kind of kick back into their tactical mode and have a plan and have a backup plan and be prepared in case the encounter goes downhill. Because you never know when that's going to become, is it going to become violent, or is it just going to be a lot of mouth and a lot of obstacles to efficiency? You just don't know.
Have there, I know that there have been some very high profile sovereigns that have hit the news. Can you think of a couple who really created some very detrimental things in this country?
Yes. Yeah, so, probably the first high profile one that folks are not even aware, really, Terry Nichols. We know him from his infamy as a lot of people believe the only co-defendant with Timothy McVeigh in the Murrah Building bombing in Oklahoma City. Terry Nichols was a documented sovereign from way back. Mid-80s, late-80s, all the way up to the time of the bombing. He had houses foreclosed on because he had been trying to pay for them in these scams that we're talking about. He would get these, come to court and get contempt of court charges for bringing in the judge's oath of office and tearing it in court. We know him. We know I would say in the modern era, the ones that really brought sovereignty to the forefront for law enforcement were Jerry and Joe Kane, a father and son sovereign citizen duo in West Memphis, Arkansas, set up a tactical ambush of two interdiction officers there in West Memphis and murdered both of them on the side of the road. That's when this problem really came to the forefront for American law enforcement. murdered them on the side of the road, and then died in a shootout with police a couple hours later, also in Arkansas. Wesley Snipes, you know, everybody knows, extremely popular worldwide, you know, fame, movie star. Everybody knows Wesley Snipes went to prison. You know, everybody knows he went to prison for not paying taxes. And, you know, for most folks, that's the sensational part of the story. But, you know, us in law enforcement, we always ask, well, why is that? And, you know, Larry King did an interview with Wesley Snipes after he was locked up and is serving a 3-year federal sentence on tax evasion, and asked him why. And Wesley went on and on about how he's now been enlightened that he's a non-resident alien. He's of Moorish descent. Therefore, the federal tax mandates don't apply to him. You know, there's cases like that that a lot of times just slide under the radar. We know in February 2010, I think it was, there was a fellow named Andrew Joseph Stack in Austin, Texas, that flew his private Piper Dakota airplane into the IRS building in Austin, Texas. And he also was a sovereign. He did that as a last-ditch homicidal, suicidal protest to what he saw was, you know, forced regulation and taxation, and him as a sovereign was not going to take it. So there's tons of examples like that in the news that folks hear about that we often don't kind of connect the dots.
This is fascinating stuff. So what would you estimate the number of sovereign citizens in the United States? Is there a way to estimate that?
I don't know that, you know, we get that question a lot, and I don't know that there really is. You know, the problem is these are the type of folks that are not prone to, you know, be very cooperative with any kind of poll or census.
You mean they're not going to go under the census and say, hey, I'm a sovereign?
That's right. You may have maybe a bit of an obstacle to good communication there. But we have heard, you know, the 300,000 number has been going around for several years now. And I don't discount that at all. I don't know that, you know, with the internet as providing this message as easy as it is, I wouldn't be surprised at that number at all. But it's very challenging to put a number on it.
Well, I think this is a really fascinating topic. I mean, we didn't even get into some of the other aspects of what you train people on. But tell us about your training company.
Yeah, so we you know, again, we kind of built this idea out of necessity. Myself and my partner from Intel, who's also an active duty detective here in the city, we kind of cater programs for what folks need. We'll get a call or an email from an agency. Most recently we were in Michigan and got a call there, and we'll do some research on what specific strain of sovereigns those folks have there, or if they're looking for training on white nationalism, or we do a lot of Antifa training now. And then we'll build and cater, a training regimen based on what they need. If it's a 1 8-hour day or a couple days, and we'll do classes of 50 or auditoriums of 2000. And it's always a lot of fun because I get to meet my brothers and sisters across the country, which is always just really encouraging. But you also get, after the training, we'll get tricklings of emails in the weeks and months after that saying, you know, it's amazing. We stopped a guy. He said exactly what you said he was going to say. I was prepared. This is how it played out. And therefore, officers can be way more competent and in dealing with their investigations. Most of all, more safe, which is the top priority. But secondly, most competent in full investigations. Because once you peel back the mystery of anything, and folks are less anxious or less fearful, you can really relax in those settings. And deal with what you already know is going to happen, which is a lot of fun to hear the payoff of those trainings.
Oh, I'm sure. So, and how long have you been doing the training?
We started in earnest around 2009. Again, out of necessity, wasn't a plan. We just realized that we had put in the work to learn more about this particular subset that, you know, no one else had done yet, and we didn't want our brothers and sisters to get behind in the information cycle. So, yeah, we've been teaching pretty heavily for, I guess it's a decade now.
Wow, that's amazing. And you juggle this while you're working full-time as a law enforcement officer as well.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it's dedicated people like you that really make a difference in the lives of our law enforcement all over the country. How would my listeners, if they want to contact you, reference your training, or just with questions, how would they contact you?
Yeah, the best way is an email address, the email address that we use for most of our training. It's a Gmail account, confidentialflowers, all one word, at gmail.com. And from there, we just start a conversation on what you need and how we can help. And, you know, we even do, telephone consulting. And, you know, that's very loose terminology. We're just having conversations with brothers and sisters across the country, just sharing what we happen to have, which is everybody wins, which is a lot of fun.
Okay, wait, hold on a second. Confidential flowers. It sounds like an escort service.
That's perfect.
So, do you have a website?
We don't, and the reason that we don't, Randy, we toyed with the ideas early on, but when you're training about this particular subgroup, it's very challenging to put anything on the open internet, because we did have some trainings early on when we would advertise them on the open internet. Where we had sovereigns, I guess you could say, infiltrate some of our training. We had a sovereign attorney show up and really create a kind of a mess during training. So for that reason, we've had to keep it, just because I don't know of another way to really do it. We've had to just keep it almost email to email, word of mouth, back and forth on the phone, just to protect our assets and to, you know, protect our safety.
That's very interesting. So these individuals are so insidious that you have to be very circumspect so that you don't inadvertently wind up training sovereigns on on the methods of law enforcement.
That's right. We ran a training in, I think it was in the state of Iowa now, 4 or 5 years ago, and advertised it on the open internet, and the venue got a possible threat of violence against it that had to be investigated. So, yeah, we're pretty particular about it now, and that's why, you know, I'll get a call or an email, and I make sure I vet everybody before I call them back, and then we can have we always have a good conversation if it's someone with good intentions.
That underscores just how important your training is, and also, you know, you're taking a great personal risk by even being involved in this for as long as you have. So, you know, once again, I want to thank you for what you do, for your service, as well as, playing a role for safety in the world of law enforcement. Once again, what is that email address again?
So again, it's confidentialflowers, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com.
Confidentialflowers@gmail.com. For my law enforcement listeners, you might really want to consider this. This is some very vital training. Corey, thanks so much for taking the time and joining us here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks a lot, Randy. I appreciate the opportunity very much.
I want to tell you about a really interesting company that has a nationwide security presence. It's called offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's actually law enforcement specialists, but you can check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. They have a very unique approach to providing security to commercial establishments, residential, any security need that you might have, because they use actual sworn officers. So if you are a police officer or deputy in this country and you want to work extra jobs, as most do, usually you go through your department. This company, offdutypoliceofficers.com, is their website, law enforcement specialists, actually makes arrangements so that you can work those off-duty jobs, and they work in concert with your agency. It's a great opportunity, and also they have a great presence in almost every state in the union. So, law enforcement specialists, if you are a law enforcement officer and you want to work extra jobs, contact them, offdutypoliceofficers.com. If you have a security need, if you are a commercial establishment, if you are a construction company and need traffic jobs, contact them. They have the personnel. They are trained. They are law enforcement officers, and they have all the abilities to provide all of your security needs, and they are a great company. They're based out of Arizona, but they're all over the country. Offdutypoliceofficers.com, and it's law enforcement specialists. You can also contact them by phone, 888-572-2442. It's 888-572-2442. As we start 2019, I want to tell you about something I've been working on for more than 2 years, and it is now coming to fruition. It is called The Wounded Blue, the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I'm really excited about this. I have neglected to mention it because I wanted to wait until we had our approval as a 501c3 nonprofit. The organization is going to be a national organization to assist injured and disabled law enforcement officers who have unfortunately been abandoned or left alone by their police agencies and their cities, very often to live in poverty. I know that is hard to believe, but it is very true. We are in the fundraising portion of our existence right now. And of course, we'll have to do that as long as we are an organization. But while we are getting ready to launch, it is time to start raising money for these men and women. If you would, go to this website. It is www.thewoundedblue.org. Take a look at it. And there is a donate button. And we are now a 501c3, which means that all of your donations are tax deductible. I will be telling you much more about this organization as time goes by, as we launch it. And this is a very exciting time. We are going to be changing lives of many in law enforcement. TheWoundedBlue.org.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we acknowledge the sacrifice of the men and women of the law enforcement profession who have been forced to make the ultimate sacrifice and give their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have one name to read. Deputy Sheriff Joshua L.J. Ryer, Jr. of the Glasscock County Sheriff's Office in Georgia. Deputy Sheriff L.J. Ryer was killed in a vehicle crash while en route to the Regional Youth Detention Center in Washington, Georgia, to pick up an inmate. His patrol car collided with another vehicle at the intersection of Andrew Drive and Georgia Route 47. Deputy Ryer had served with the Glasscock County Sheriff's Office for only 5 months. Deputy Sheriff Joshua L.J. Ryer, Jr., Glasscock County Sheriff's Office, Georgia. End of Watch, Tuesday, January 29th, 2019. May he rest in peace. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. I hope that you enjoyed today's broadcast, and there is much more to come as we enter 2019. If you would, I would really love for you to visit thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. It's the new support and assistance organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. You're going to be hearing a lot about this because this is one of the most important organizations that I've ever been involved with, and it is going to touch the lives of hundreds of thousands of law enforcement families in this country. If you are in need of talking to someone, if you are a law enforcement professional and you are troubled by post-traumatic stress, you have been injured in the line of duty and are having issues dealing with it, contact us at this organization, thewoundedblue.org. Also, check out my books, amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We'll see you next week.